back to part two. I'll try not to be as long as I was in the first. I was measuring how time flies. Sorry about that. I never time these things, just waffle on, really. So, the time came that I decided that something I'd wanted to do for a long, long time. The steam packet had a view that if you worked with the steam packet, you worked with the steam packet. And if you wanted to go into local politics, if you wanted to stand for the town council, or someday for Onkin commissioners, if you lived in Onkin, all right, you can do that if you want, but that's where you go full time, you know. And so we didn't have the opportunity, like some businesses do, that allow their staff members time to go. So I always knew that I would try and do that, and it's all very corny, I suppose, really, but the thing you did it for, because you wanted to do a little bit, you want to put it back into the Isle of Man, really. That's as plain as I can make it. Pride in the island, and you wanted to do your bit. I'd been 38 years at the steam packet company, and the time, I thought, was right. You had a mortgage and children and costs and things, and so it was a bit chancy. When it's the right time, it's probably never the right time. What sort of drives you to give up a secure job and take a chancy job, really? Because when the 5 years are up, which unbelievably will be next year, September, you may well be cast out and looking for a job again, doing nothing. And the reason you want to do it, and that's why you do it. So you want to help the island, help people, that type of thing. I was just reminded by Sam about a fellow who changed jobs. There was a fellow, you may have read it in the Isle of Man Courier, and it was a crash that happened in Victoria Street. A car coming down Victoria Street, a taxi was coming down, and swerved at the top where Martin's Bank used to be in Lockbridge, Victoria Street Church, Methodist Church, came down where, over across the road where Yelling's Foundry used to be, careered back across the road and crashed into the front window of Cowley Groves, the travel agent, and smashed up against the wall. You may remember that. Policeman came along and said, "What's going on?" Well, the fellow who was driving the car was stunned. The fellow who was in the back of the car was absolutely, the passenger in the back of the taxi, and the fellow said, what went wrong? The taxi driver said, "I'm awfully sorry." He said, "It's my fault totally." The passenger said, "What went wrong?" Well, he said, "It's when you tapped me on the shoulder." He said, "Why?" He said, "This is the first day of driving a taxi. For the last 25 years, I've been driving a hearse." So the other great role, I think, for a Member of Parliament here in the Isle of Man, which I think is most important, is the ambassadorial role, if you like, because here in the island we meet so many people. The Isle of Man, what we have to realise is that the Isle of Man, small, we've looked at the past and how important the Isle of Man was, and perhaps we didn't appreciate that, just what it gave to the world. The Isle of Man government, people have come from all over the world to the Isle of Man. It's a successful financial centre, the oldest parliament in the world. People come to see how our parliament works, so it's a great pride there. So I suppose it's true to say, really, that as an MHK, the only time people want you is when they're in trouble. When times are good, it doesn't matter. But anybody got a problem? I stood to Douglas West. I don't live in Douglas West. I live in Douglas North, but about 150 yards over the border. And so that's permissible. But Douglas West is where I spent a lot of my childhood, where I went to church. I still go to church and the youth club. And I was very much at home in Douglas West. So I stood to Douglas West, learn as you go, posters, flyers, knocking on doors. Never done that type of thing before, putting together a manifesto. But I've always enjoyed meeting people, and believe it or not, I've always enjoyed talking to people. and knew quite a lot of people, and sort of, and that's part of the enjoyment, part of the job. We had a one of the big learning curves that you come across is the requisition meeting. And I've been to one or two requisition meetings in the past, but never had to be actually there. And it's a bit like this, where the candidates for the constituency are on trial, virtually. Well, the day dawned of the requisition meeting, and I was petrified at the thought of this because I'd never had to do this before, and I will be the next time when we come round. And the day dawned, it was the worst day in history. The rain battered down. Just let me through because these are constituents of mine. You can come in. Yeah. Please come in. Although they have dual nationality, I think. Peel as well. And the day dawned. It was a black, miserable day. The rain was bouncing that high off the ground. It never stopped all day. And I thought, thank God for that. Nobody will come out tonight. You know, it'll be half a dozen people and a dog sitting in the church hall, my church hall, sitting there. And they turned up on the night. I've never seen so many people in one hall in my life, sitting on windowsills, hanging from the doors. Tremendous. And so much had played on my mind that that day I'd had a letter, and I mention this because the chairman mentioned it when he introduced me. I'd had a letter which I thought was a send-up, and threw the envelope away and had to retrieve it later and flatten it out again to keep the posterity. A letter from 10 Downing Street to say that I was being considered for an MBE. And I was that worried about the requisition meeting. It was 2 days before I remembered to tell my wife that I was getting an MBE. I was so petrified about this requisition meeting. And anyway, the election came and I was elected in. There's a swearing in. One of the, you know, the learning part of the unknown parts, really, of becoming a member of the House. Swearing in ceremony with the first Deemster in the House of Keys, where you take the oath to the country and, of course, to the Lord of Man, to the head of state, the Queen. Proud day, sobering day. You almost felt the weight of responsibility. If you hadn't before, you certainly did on that day that you were taking your seat in a parliament, which is the oldest parliament in the world, and we go to all these parliamentary meetings across, and parliamentarians from across come to the Isle of Man, you know, oh, mother of parliaments, Isle of Man, you know, if you're the mother of parliaments, we're the grandmother of parliaments, you know, we were kicking around 300 years before Westminster got themselves organised, you know, so don't tell us what to do, and that's the kind of the attitude that we take now, in a nice way, but we sort of let them know now and again, you know, that we've been kicking around for quite some time. And so we talk to these people when they come in, and great to see. And you have that feeling that here I am sitting in my seat in the House of Keys and in Tyndall Chamber and Tyndall Court, that, you know, so many people in the past have, you know, you think, what speeches have come from this seat? You know, what are they trying to do? And, you know, what am I trying to do? You think, you know, time is going so quick. You know, it's 5 years almost. Now you felt as if you've hardly done anything, you know. And yet you have. You've been looked back and lots of little things that you've done and things you still want to do. I'm very proud of the fact that I have achieved to be a member of the House of Keys. I'm very proud to be a part of the front line, if you like, off the Isle of Man. The political issues when you went round knocking on doors around the and it takes a long time. I never got round every door because it just wasn't possible. I was still working, of course, although the Steam Bank were very good and gave me time to do it, but didn't get round everybody. The big issues of the day was immigration. In 2006, anyway, people were so worried, you know, once you see different people talking different language, different colour, perhaps some of them. And that was a big... Now, I think in lots of ways that's diminished now. I don't hear people worried here at the Isle of England. But I think here in the Isle of Man, people aren't too worried. Perhaps we could get a bit of a view on that. But immigration doesn't seem to have the same problems as it did. And when you look at the makeup now of the Isle of Man, if we were to remain all Macs, we won't be going anywhere. You know, we have to welcome people in to the Isle of Man. But if we didn't have people from far distant parts of the world, a large number of our hotels would be shut. Our nursing homes would be shut. Wouldn't have the staff to do it because we haven't got we haven't got a great number of people out of work, and B, people don't want to work on social hours. You know, so I think, and I may be wrong, do you feel that immigration is not the same issue as it is as it was, or would you say that there's still a problem with immigration? Seems to have levelled out, found its level.
Once they've got kids that's gone to school, and they grow, they're Manx, they're not people.
Well, that's right. We've not got to, well, we could talk all night about that, but I think a lot of the people who came in have gone back again now, because lots of the countries they came from, their economy has grown so much now, and they've gone back. I don't see that, but I know that the people are here. The vast majority are giving something in to the Isle of Man. And the other big issue was nursing home fees. That seems to have levelled itself. It's always going to be a problem because that is expensive. The medical care is expensive in that area. And I was talking to some people who'd been away on a cruise. They had noticed that there was a lady, an elderly lady on the cruise, who every member of the crew seemed to know. She was looked after, feted, almost on first name terms with this lady. And they thought she must be a very important lady. I wonder if she's the owner's son, or perhaps she is the owner of the cruise line. So they said to her one evening, they were sitting having a drink on the ship, you know, are you to do that? Oh, no, she said, I'm a retired lady. But she said, there's no way, she said, that I'm going to finish up in a nursing home. A nursing home, she said, will cost about £700, this is when she started, £700 a week. She checked with the cruise line that she could cruise back to back on the cruise for about £580 a week, which would leave her a balance of £120. She reckons gratuities would cost about £10 a week. She can have as many as 10 meals a day. She can waddle back and forth to the restaurant. She can have room service if she wants it. She can have breakfast in bed every day. Princess liners, got swimming, 3 or 4 swimming pools, workout room, free washers and dryers and showers every night, free toothpaste and free bits and pieces there, and free soap and shampoo. They'll even treat you like a customer, not as a patient, as they would in a nursing home. An extra £5 worth of tips. We'll have the entire staff scrambling to help you. If the television is broken or the light bulb wants replacing, pick up the phone, somebody will be here, whiz it up, fix everything and apologise for the inconvenience. Clean sheets and towels every day, you don't have to ask for them. If you fall in the nursing home and break your leg, you're thrown on the mercy of the NHS. If you fall and break a hip on a cruise liner, they'll upgrade you to a suite for the rest of your life. And then if you want to see the Amazon and South America and the fjords going past you, your door, there's a ship going to all these places, and they have a ship ready to go. So she said, I'm not waiting for relatives to come and see me as when they feel like it. She said, this is what I'm going to do, cruise all the time. And she said, the best thing about it is, too, when I die, they tip you over the side, there's no undertaker's fees. So she had it right. And almost like a vicar, here in the Isle of Man, a member of Parliament shares many intimate secrets and problems of constituents who are in problem and talk to you. And that's one of the nice parts of the job, is talking to these people, sharing with them, and trying to resolve. You know, a politician's job is to bring two, not warring factions, but different factions together and get the best deal you can for people. And that's nice to be able to do. You can't always do it. You can't win and suit all the people all of the time. But I was talking to, there was an old gentleman who lives in the parish that I'm involved in, and he had a problem. And we were able to sort a good, and he was delighted, and thanks very much, he said, for helping. And he wrote a nice letter back. And he finished off the letter by just explaining, you know, as old people do. He said, I certainly am old now. This is letter. I can't give you names because it's can't tell you who he is. But he said, I'm sure I have got old now. I've had 2 bypass surgeries, a hip replacement, new knees. I've fought prostate cancer and diabetes. I'm half blind. I can't hear anything quieter than a jet engine. I take 40 different medications that make me dizzy, give me wind, and subject me to blackouts. I have bouts of dementia. I have poor circulation. I hardly can feel my hands and feet anymore. And I can't remember if I'm 85 or 92. I've lost all my friends. But thank God I still have my driver's license. I've enjoyed a variety of jobs since signing up to the government of the Isle of Man. The other thing you get when you sort of arrive there, you're sworn in, and then what do you do now? And you wait for a phone call then from whoever has been appointed, because everybody's the same, election, everybody's new in. Choose one of the first jobs is choose a chief minister, choose a speaker of the house. The chief minister then will appoint his ministers, 9 ministers, and with the recent reshuffle and restructuring of government, which is still going on. I did forge a piece of paper today to tell you what the department, I've left it in my bag, but it wouldn't matter because I can't remember where we are or who's involved in what department, or even my own department. Who lies where now? So you wait. The chief minister appoints his ministers. The minister then appoints his or hers members, people they'd like to work on their team with them. And I had a telephone call from the Department of Tourism, which wasn't surprising, and one from the Department of Education, and one from the Department of Trade and Industry. Nobody told me that one department is quite enough. And you say, oh yes I'll do that. So I went to the Board of Education, I went to one meeting, and was never appointed after that. I don't know what happened to the Board of Education, that went. But I was left with the Department of Tourism and the Department of Trade and Industry. And the Department of Trade and Industry was a small department in comparison. It was, it's a different department now, of course. And I can't remember, Clive, what the name of the new Department of
Economic Development,
God will do. It sounds all right, anyway. I bet you just made that up as well. And anyway, a wonderful department because you get people coming to the Isle of Man wanting to set up business, entrepreneurial ideas. And the department I'm in now, I'm glad to say, and honoured to be a member of the lead department of Economic Development, whose initials is DED, dead. But that is the core department of government, and I'm glad that I'm in that department, and you feel as if you can do a lot there. But the Department of Trade and Industry was an excellent department to start life in, as was indeed the Department of Tourism, and I still am, where all these people came with ideas, and we had to assess and equate as to what may happen and how well it would go and what it would mean to the Isle of Man and what deployment it would mean, how it would generate money, and huge, all different kinds of ideas and helping these businesses to get going. And one of the great strengths of the Isle of Man is its diversity of economy, how it is, we have to make money, we have to survive. Our government cannot work to a deficit. We have to make a profit every year, which is good, unlike the UK government, who is billions in the red now. The government of the Isle of Man cannot get into that position by statute. And so all these ideas came through. Well, one crowd came through with a great idea. Now, I don't know many people here enjoy a glass of wine. Wine drinking has become very, very popular. And these particular people came to see us, and they were interested in and said that they'd done some tests on the southern slopes of the mountains here in the Isle of Man. They'd like to experiment with growing vines here in the Isle of Man. Oh, this is fantastic. Here we go. This will be tremendous. So they were part of the Californian vintner crowd, Napa Valley people who make primarily produces Pinot Blanc, the Pinot Noir, and the Pinot Grigio wines, which you're probably familiar with. I can see you nodding your head. But these people were developing a hybrid grape. This was a tremendous, and it acts as an antidiuretic, which means for the older person drinking this wine, you wouldn't have to get up during the night. which he thought this is even better. So they have this you know, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Noir, Pinot Grigio. They're going to call this Pinot More. So we hope that will take off in the Isle of Man. DTI, I had responsibility for work permits, which was I'm glad I didn't have to stay there for too long. In the Department of Tourism, Leisure, the Royal Marina, the Gaiety Theatre, which of course I totally enjoyed, apart from always a great worry, Royal Marina and Gaiety Theatre, they are iconic buildings in the Isle of Man. They are buildings which will never make a profit because they are, you know, to keep those buildings running, you would have to charge a fantastic amount for them. They're never going to make money, but we have to make as much money as we can to keep the place afloat, which is why you'll often hear people complaining it was costing a lot of money to hire the Villa Marina, to hire the Gaiety Theatre, in comparison to other places in other parts of the world. It is a very much a reduced rate. We have to expect that we're going to lose money on it, but nevertheless, if the concert hall of the Isle, it's the Albert Hall of the Isle of Man, really, always will have problems. The Royal Marina, you'll agree, is a tremendous, fantastic venue. We get entertaining stars coming from all over the world to come to the Royal Marina. The Royal Marina is too small for lots of these big stars. The priests are arriving here. They're singing tomorrow night. And this will be one of the smaller venues that they'll probably sing at. But they'll go back. They'll say how tremendous it is. We get this feedback from all these big stars that come here. They liken it to almost entertaining at somebody's birthday party because they're right on the people and they're close to the people. And the sound system, absolutely fantastic. Now they go back, they tell their manager, they tell their promoter, and they tell their friends in the entertainment business, the Isle of Man is a fantastic venue to go to. And that's where we get a lot of our repeat business coming back. That's how good the Villa Marina and indeed the Gaiety Theatre. Tremendous, but has its problems. One job I was given as well, I was taken off the DTI. Chief Minister called me in and said, how are things going? Well, yes, all right, Chief Minister. Yes, he said, I want to take it away from DTI. Oh, I said, anything wrong? No. He said, I've got another job for you. What's that? He said, the MEA.
What?
So the MEA, it was just coming out of the bad patch, and the MEA is a great success story now, and will be. And although you may not think of it when you're paying your bill, but there's a tremendous, it's a multi-million-pound business, and multi-million-pound deals done daily, weekly, certainly, in the MEA. You'll never, very rarely now, you'll see the lights dim or go out as it used to. It really is a tremendous undertaking. So the MEA is a Tynwald appointment, and it has to be ratified. It has to be that position promoted by the Chief Minister and agreed by Tynwald members. So it appeared on the paper to appoint Jeff Gold, MHK, as member of the MEA. So he said yes, and everybody, to a man and woman, and I'll never forgive them, said yes. Put Corbish on the MEA, the bishop. It was Graham Knowles, who is now Dean of St Paul's. I saw him writing a little note, gave to the messenger, and the messenger came over and said, from the bishop. Congratulations on your appointment to the MEA. You must have led a terrible life to be appointed to the MEA. Yeah, that's a story. Well done. So presently, the job is member of the Department of Economic Development, which is the lead department, and a wealth generator. I'm going to sneeze. A wealth generator for the Isle of Man. That's where we. That's the engine room, perhaps, of the Isle of Man. Still a member for tourism. Huge competition now. For the world is small, perhaps because of the Icelandic ash. First they take our money, now they take our air. The Icelandic people, perhaps people will take the short break now. We've got EasyJet coming on this month, 27th, I think. EasyJet come to the Isle of Man. They have their aeroplane takes 150 people or something like that, but they reckon they get about an 85% take up. So we'd like to think that EasyJet, the Isle of Man now spread across EasyJet, internet site, website, new route, Isle of Man. Great advertising for the Isle of Man, and we should get, because there's only one flight a day initially, we'll get a lot of people staying overnight, certainly, and open up the Isle of Man. Perhaps then. For longer stays. I'm now responsible for the TT and motorsport, so a big learning curve now to get the grips TT. If anything goes wrong, it'll be my fault. Motorsports, of which we do a great amount of motorsports in the Isle of Man. The Isle of Man, where our great strengths are, and we have many strengths, so the diversification of our economy is great, but our great strength is that we can attract special events here to the Isle of Man. In the Legislative Council, there are pictures around the wall, if you've been in there you've seen them, of past Lieutenant Governors of the Isle of Man. And one of them is the Lord Raglan, who, despite being not a very liked Lieutenant Governor when he was here, he very rarely stayed much time in the Isle of Man. He didn't think much of the Isle of Man. He was probably staying in London most of the time. But the Lord Raglan, what we can thank him for, is he was sitting in the RAC Club, I think it was, in London, met Henry Rolls of Rolls-Royce, saying, this was in 1902, saying that how much they wanted to have road racing in England, the authorities wouldn't let them. Lord Raglan said, and Lord Raglan, of course, was ruling the Isle of Man then, he was the governor, he had the final say, said, we'll do it in the Isle of Man. So they finished their cigar and brandy, and that was it. So back, job done. And in 1907, of course, we had the started the TT races, and in 2007 had the centenary of the Isle of Man TT races, which is in a fortnight's time. We'll be here again with record entries. Tremendous, this event. Still carrying on. I still believe that England have never forgiven us for getting away with it and doing so well out of it either. Training, employment and skills is part of my remit now too, where we're looking at job opportunities for young people, people who are not in employment or very poor education, poor training, that we can reintroduce into the workplace by providing proper training and opportunities. For that, the job centre for that comes into that as well. I remain vice chairman of the Isle of Man Post Office, which is a great, great job. The Post Office is an arm of government and yet very much a commercial undertaking. Again, a multi-million pounds business which has seen great expansion. That has to diversify as well. Whilst we sell postage stamps and people still send letters, there are less letters being sent now because people are using the internet. So we have to find different ways of how the Isle of Man Post Office can reinvent itself into the new electronic age, which we're doing quite successfully. I sit on the Tunnel Management Committee. Tunnel Management Committee runs the office, if you like, of Tunneled. I sit on the Tunnel Economic Initiatives Committee, which again is working apart from the DTI, what was the DTI, into ideas to enable the Isle of Man to look at new ideas, to set up, to pass them on, perhaps into the DTI, but to attract business and talk to people, sit on the Chief Minister's Social Policy, and that looks at problems that around the Isle of Man that we come across, which big city centres and towns all over the UK do and further afield, looking at how we can best adapt those social problems, if you like, to overcome them. I sit on the Retail Policy Committee as well, and that's looking at how we can keep our retail section of the Isle of Man, which is so, so important. We have a problem, well, not a problem, but a concerning area now with Tesco, who want to expand. I'll come back to that a little later. I've been appointed to the Queen's Silver Jubilee Committee, looking at ways, and if you've got any ideas, I'll be pleased to hear them, of how we can celebrate next year the Golden Jubilee.
Diamond,
thank you very much. And I'm sitting on the committee. We've only had one meeting, by the way, that's why I can't remember it. So the Diamond Jubilee, 60 years? 60 years, I got that bit right. And how we're going to celebrate, and we may get hopefully a royal visit during that year as well, but how we can have a lasting part for the Isle of Man to remember this very special year. Vice Chairman of the Timbuk Council with Disabilities. And I also sat on the Council of Ministers working group looking at the Ramsey Pier. Another one I didn't want, but I got it. Now we'll come back to that in a little minute. Tourism. I spent a lot of time in the tourism division. It's such a huge business. Tourism for the. I keep saying, remember looking at. I spent a huge amount of time looking at Summerland. The Summerland. You know, we still call ourselves a resort. I think that we're selling ourselves short as a resort, because we don't have the full amenities. We would have the full amenities if we had a wet weather facility for people. And what I say to our department, and they took offense, a bit of a gasp when I said, forget about the visitor, build for the resident. Because we want these facilities. Yes. The visitor will get it because it's here already. Yeah. You know, build it for ourselves. Because we want that, and I'd spent a lot of blood, sweat, and tears on Summerland site, and it got so very, very, very close. And then, because of problems with the heads of terms of agreement with the second group, unfortunately, it fell apart. Now, I still hope that will come to fruition at some point. But one of the things you have to accept, and it's very difficult to, coming from the private sector into government, it's just how slow things have to happen with government. And we saw that with the reciprocal health, and we can perhaps mention that a little later, briefly. I've always enjoyed, if anything went wrong with steam tanking, you would summon a meeting in your office, what went wrong, it won't happen tomorrow, will it? No, it won't. Job done. Government, write out. You can write out 6 months sometimes, perhaps to get it, because it has to go, that's the way it has to be done. So tourism, not only attracting people to the Isle of Man, but also enhancing the quality of life for people here in the Isle of Man. It's a wealth generator. It brings in about £116 million to the Manx Exchequer. If tourism failed, £116 million is a lot to find from another venture. So we need to work at, and I'm glad to say there are lots of, and this is a saying I'm not fond of, but I'll use it, green shoots. In tourism in the Isle of Man, there are a lot of people, you'll read about it shortly, people who are investing, wanting to build. There are people wanting to build new hotels in the Isle of Man. It's not easy. It takes a lot of money getting together. It takes grant assistance from the department. We have a grant assistance scheme which we can give up to £1 million in some cases to help new tourism premises get up and running. I'm glad to say that there are perhaps not up to £1 million, but certainly a lot of people who are wanting to invest in tourism because there is a future there. So a lot of frustration and impatience. And of course, we have an £8 million pot now, initiated by the Chief Minister for the regeneration of our towns and villages around the Isle of Man. And £8 million perhaps sounds a lot, but £8 million when you think that I'm very eager and pushing hard for, and there's no disrespect appeal, but pushing to spend a lot of money on Douglas. Douglas is our shop window, a lot of people come through there, there's a lot of, you know, the chairman's wife syndrome, come to the Isle of Man to take, you know, to come from Jersey, Guernsey, wherever they're going to come from, come to the Isle of Man. Drive along the promenade. If you've driven along the promenade lately, I think there are better roads in Basra than what there are along Douglas Promenade. It's disgraceful. And, you know, we as a world-leading financial centre who have great pride in what they're doing and go to great lengths to succeed at what they're doing, for people to come and see Douglas and Strand Street, you know, we need to do an awful lot of work there. And again, this is where the impatience and frustration comes in. It's all taking time. I just want to get on, dig the promenade up, redo it. Have you ever been to Nice? You've been to Nice. Nice Promenade. I don't want to replicate Nice, but Nice Promenade is something similar to how I see Douglas becoming, which will be a great place for people all around the Isle of Man to come and enjoy, whether you're paying Douglas rates or not. We don't mind you coming in from Peel and Ramsey and enjoy Douglas and see a nice promenade, winter and summer, where it will be very cosmopolitan and people can enjoy, their children and families can enjoy. So tourism has all that to offer. And the Isle of Man has to pay its way. It has to work hard. Always going to be problems with in government, no matter how successful we are, there are always going to be problems, because problems will present themselves from all kinds of diverse areas. And the present problems we have, of course, is the reciprocal health agreement, which was an absolute worry and concern to everybody, not least members of Parliament. I could only hazard a guess as to how absolutely difficult it would have been, could still be, but I don't think so, how it would be for people who want to go away, people of a certain age, people who have ongoing health problems, to get off the island, having to fill out forms, having to go through all kinds of absolutely horrendous. I just shudder. It was the worst scenario. The way it was done by the British government was disgraceful. And many of us, strange to say, I various things to do, had some contact with politicians in the UK government and in other parties, and I was writing to them and saying, look, what can we do? The cost to the UK Treasury came down, as one of the speeches I gave in Timbuktu, 0.0028% was the value of the cost of the Isle of Man to the UK DHSS budget, infinitesimal. And to do this, you know, absolutely dreadful. So that was an ongoing problem. I'd like to think now, and I'm not putting any hairs running here, but I'd like to think that after all the angst that we've gone through, and after all the efforts that many of members of Tynwald did to try and turn this around, it was an absolutely wonderful moment in Tynwald. We knew this debate was coming up. We knew the feeling outside. One of the big problems that we have to remember is that government works, Parliament, government works so much different than the man in the street. You know, the man in the street will think it's quite an easy thing to do. Parliament, talking to Parliament, doesn't work. And I can't explain it, but unless you're there. It's very, very difficult, frustrating, lonely job. And we were kicking off at 2:30, as we normally do, in Tynwald, where the first item on the order paper was a civil health agreement. And we all had speeches ready. I had don't know, 4 pages. We were all ready to speak on this and voicing our angst and that. So up to 5 minutes before going in, we're in one of the offices talking and saying, how are we going to play this? Like, you're going to, I'm going to speak on this, I'm going to speak on that, and I'm going to be right out. We got down into the house, into Tindall Court, sat there. The public gallery was absolutely jam-packed. The disabled gallery behind Mr. President's and the legislative council section, packed with people. We had dreadful problems. It was absolutely packed with people. And all ready for this. You know, this is going to be an absolute bombshell, this is going to be terrible, and how are we going to cope with this? And we'd all been talking to insurance people to try and get the best insurance deals for people, and oh, God, it was, we lost sleep over it, you know. And a few minutes ago, you know, the President said, a statement from the Chief Minister, and the Chief Minister came and said what he said. Andy Byrne had been on the phone during that and had given us a stay of execution for 6 months. And I've very rarely had that feeling, you'll hear people say, about a weight that came off his shoulders. It was as if somebody had, similar to winning a lottery, I would think, because there was this, we were right up against the wall, right up to it, and here was the Chief Minister, Andy Byrne's been on, we're looking at it, you know, take it away. And the public gallery exploded into applause, and I did, and 2 or 3 other members, you know, and then I suddenly thought, I'm not allowed to do that. And Mr. President looked very stern, and then the Chief Minister added something else to that, and again, because you could feel the emotion draining from the gallery and from the house, you know, to think, God, for that, you know, there's light at the end of this tunnel. And so again, this is this spontaneity of applause, and Mr. President, without a glimmer, said, if there are any more outbursts like this in my court, I will empty the gallery. You'll not get voted in again, I don't think. But anyway, it was unfortunate, but absolutely. So reciprocal health agreement.
Sorry.
Tell them I'm busy at the moment. the back sharing arrangement of the UK, where we're going to lose £140 million in the Exchequer, takes a lot of getting together again. Government has got to look at itself, analyse itself, restructure itself, streamline itself. Huge problems there, which we will cope with. We've just had going through Parliament, and we'll continue for a little while now, Civil Partnerships Bill, which I feel strongly about, that will bubble on a little bit. One of the biggest problems I see for the Isle of Man is our ongoing relationship with the United Kingdom government. Despite all the other problems there are, I think that's a fundamental item that we have to look at. We have to be, there's an old saying, you know, keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer. I'm not saying the UK are enemies, but I'm saying they're a little bit more distant, and we've got to keep close to them, work with them, and really build on that relationship between them and us. They are our sponsors, you know, in the hardest terms. They could close us down tomorrow if they really wanted to. So we have to work hard at that relationship, and I think, to me, that's one of the big problems facing us now, and one of the important challenges to go at. Lonely job, yes, it is a lonely job. You know, if I was one of 3 members who voted against the civil partnership, I voted against the restructured government as well. Not everybody agrees with you, and you can be not ostracised, but you know, because you're a little bit different than what you think. You know, so it can be a lonely job. Great deal of reading, thinking, sharing thoughts, or balanced views, talking to people, getting the feel of how the island thinks, you know, to make sure that you've got an idea, is my idea shared with other people, yes or no. And you have to remember that you can't please all the people all the time. very difficult in the Isle of Man because you're meeting people all the time, but you have to take that into consideration. And very importantly, the way of life we have in the Isle of Man, the security, the peacefulness, and the safety of the island has to be paramount. That we look after the people, we look after our environment, and we look after the way that we promote ourselves outside. And I have to say that, coming to an end, I've found out what bureaucracy is by being a member of Parliament, because I've found out that the Lord's Prayer has 58 words. The Ten Commandments are 297 words. The American Declaration of Independence has 310 words. But the Chief Minister's report on the restructure and streamlining of government has 28,911 words. A fellow arrived home late one night, and his wife said, "Why are you late?" He said, "I've just knocked a fellow down." She said, "Knocked a fellow down?" She said, "Yes." He said, "I have. He was a politician." "Oh my God, what happened?" "Well," he said, "I buried him." He said, "You buried him?" He said, "I did." She said, "Was he dead?" "Well, he said he wasn't," he said, "but you know what liars they are." The reason I say that is that there is great consternation and evaluation of openness and transparency. I get sick to death of hearing openness and transparency with relation to the Isle of Man. There is nowhere, I believe, and I'm not saying this from any... But there can't be anywhere else in the world where Parliament, government, members of Parliament are under such scrutiny here in the Isle of Man. That's a great thing. The role of an MHK is to be an ambassador, to be a conduit, to be a part of society, to help society, gel society. We can meet each other in the street, the Gaiety Theatre, the Villa Marina, anywhere at all. And you can say, as people do, "Hey, I'm glad I've seen you. What about such and such?" "That's fantastic. Tremendous. My name, telephone, fax, all in the book, page 36 or something in the telephone book. There they all are." Tremendous, you know, very get-attable. And that's a great, great strength for us here on the Isle of Man. The political scene on the Isle of Man is sensible and it's civilised, and the MHKs are accessible and answerable and get-attable. Long may that continue to be so. Openness and transparency, there's no doubt in my mind that the Isle of Man leads the way on that. Our island's heritage is one to be proud of. We're a proud people and a very proud island. We've given a lot to the world. We've many firsts, you know. You can go. There's a huge list of firsts that the Isle of Man has led the way. A little island, you know, in the middle between big England, the islands, in the world, given so much. You know, we've lots of firsts. We're the first to have little things like first to have illuminations on the promenade long before Blackwell anybody else thought about it. We're the first to have compulsory education for children. We gave women the vote before 1881, long before anybody else did, long before England did. And one of the reasons why perhaps England and why Mrs. Pankhurst led the battle for that was because her mother was Mrs. Kane from the Isle of Man. So she knew what was going on in the Isle of Man. So huge amount of firsts. Here in the Isle for a small place. I find myself being asked to provide some tours of legislative buildings and the history of Parliament and historic windows and things like that, and I never tire. And people from all over the world and people that you've known, various jobs you've done, people from England will come over with parties. "Will you give us a tour of Parliament buildings?" Never ever say no if I possibly can. Never tired of imparting the pride that we have in the Isle of Man in our Parliament. World's oldest Parliament. First Parliament, as Clive here knows, first Parliament in the world, to bring in electronic voting. You know, a little parliament of the other thing. First to bring that in for anybody else. And now leading the way with voice recognition, which will almost be five out of a job, because it means that Hansard, nobody's been direct, or we can, but we all have to do a stint, so we read out a passage, and now the system will pick up, recognise my voice, so that when the new Hansard comes out, it'll automatically say, Mr. Corky said. Tremendous. And other parliaments throughout the world will follow our lead on that. And people come from all different parliaments around the world to see what we do. So what we are doing really is constructing our heritage for the future. Because in the future people look back and say that was part of our heritage. We are a strong people, but a stubborn people. Thank God for that. We need to be stubborn and have resolve and rightly proud and defensive of what we have here in the Isle of Man. I know in the past, we mentioned before about the boat leaving at 9. We still are. You still hear people saying, well, we don't like it. Right? And I remember, did you ever meet Vera Martin?
Yeah.
Vera Martin was a good soul. I like Vera. Vera wrote lots of poems, the Kelly poems. And I'm coming to an end now. She wrote one poem which was called A Kind of Loving. And this is how it went. And I've often used this before. Lower me down as a Manxman, said Kelly. He got wounds in the war for the king. And then one day he brought back a wife, boy, and some kids and an old box tied with string. Well, we love little Mona like nothing when we first put a sight on her face. Like we come over, a hard-working man said, you'd be queer if you didn't like the place. Me dad brought us back here because he loved it. The Lord knew he was grinding no axe. He two medals, good hands and a family for his treasures, no wealth for the tax. They'd the secret of all integration. Dang it all, said me ma'am, speaking plain. You could make any place like a prison if you're just out for capital gain. All we come over as one stands to reason. But real love for the little isle helped us find. And that old saying still true and old, boy. There's a boat every morning at 9. There's no longer a boat at 9 o'clock in the morning, but we still cling fast to our heritage and travel into the future with determination and resolve, because that's the way that the Isle of Man is, its people is, and the way that we want it to be. I've no doubt about that at all. The Isle of Man will survive. Because we are proud, we have a great heritage. We have to survive. We will survive. It'll be difficult, but we'll do it. The Isle of Man have seen difficult times before. So, for me, Chairman and members of Peel Heritage Trust, I thank you for the invitation to be here. I've heard a lot about Peel Heritage Trust. I'm honoured to be a part of it, and I hope you've enjoyed what I've tried to convey tonight. Thank you for your.